5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You might get a bit of a handle on how I was feeling when I wrote this introduction when it comes. So here we go.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club and this is your show.
In the year 476 AD, the last Roman emperor of the West, Romulus Augustulus, was deposed by a Germanic prince, and an empire that had stood for half a millennia was brought to its knees. Meanwhile, in the year 2026 AD, Manchester City started January with a run of 2 wins in 7, which included back-to-back defeats against Manchester United and Bodo Glimt, with perhaps two of the worst performances in a decade. Like the centurions of Romulus Augustulus, I'm starting to pine for the halcyon days of Manchester City's own centurions, or treble winners, or four in a rowers. Instead, we're going to talk about the last week, so strap in, everyone. Rome wasn't rebuilt in a day. Also in today's show, we'll hear from Dave Azzopardi from Talking Wolves to find out if they've improved sufficiently or if City have fallen apart sufficiently for them to get only their second win of the season when they visit the Etihad on Saturday. We'll also preview the visit of Galatasaray and the returns of Ilkay Gundogan and Leroy Sané, and a club that they could both join on Wednesday too. You know what they say, misery courts company. So I'm David Mooney, and down in the dumps with me today, I've got City fan Matt Holland.
Hello.
We've got the noisy neighbours as well, Joey McCune.
Yo.
And Mark Mulvaney.
All right, David.
So I thought the best way to kind of pick everybody up after this week was to get the crazy lads on from Noisy Neighbours. So welcome back, boys.
Thank you.
you've got a lot of heavy lifting to do, I'm not going to lie.
Sick. Yeah.
Your challenge for me to start with is to tell me something interesting or funny to cheer me up. So what do you got?
Do you know who the emperor was before Romulus Augustulus?
I didn't check that out.
It was definitely signs that it was coming to an end when Nautius Maximus.
I thought you were going to say Manuelius Pellegrinus.
I don't think Nautius Maximus was ever... think you've made that up.
Yeah.
who knew Mulv, huge Roman Empire guy?
No, I am. Before him, it was I believe it was Bigasticus.
Okay. I thought he was a Spartan. I could have been wrong.
Come on, though. Joey, I'm sure you've seen Life of Brian.
Yes. Yeah, but you also have to remember I have the memory of a goldfish. Mm. So remembering things isn't quite my deal, unless it's like super specific.
That's good for this week, though, I guess.
Well, that's the issue, is this one's sticking with me. So, you know.
Matt, what have you got for me? You must have something something fun to cheer us up. But anything fun happened to you this week that you can help cheer us up with?
Not majorly, but this morning I saw that Manchester United had agreed to do a 6-part kind of retelling of their history in TV format as a series, like the Crown-esque on, and I just thought really quite funny to consider like how that would play out in a Manchester City style-y, and which actors you'd get to like play the key characters in our history.
See, that's a better opening question that I actually should have thought of, and didn't really, because I was too preoccupied with everything going on. I mean, the other opening question I've got after I saw from social media today. Have you ever? When was the last time you had a snowball fight, Matt?
If you include throwing snowballs at my dog the other day, then probably that when we had a bit of a bit of snowfall. But other than that, probably 20 years ago, I'd say.
Yeah, Joey, you get massive snow there, do you?
When I was in Cleveland, I would get 2 feet overnight. So I think the last snowball fight I had was probably 4 years ago when I was still up there. and my nieces and nephews came over and just pelted them, man. Had to show them what's up. And then I fed them.
Yeah.
So, you know, all's well that ends well. Put them in front of the fire, gave them some dino nuggies after just obliterating them with man-made snowballs. None of that kid.
More, what about you? Are you a good snowball? What would be your tactics going into a snowball fight? Are you a rush in there and blitz the opponent, or are you a sneaky kind of take cover and fire from behind cover?
No, I'm afraid I'm a rather large target. So definitely a defensive cover.
Step one, and, build igloo.
Yes. Definitely build the defenses first. We occasionally get snow down in Dallas, which is where Joey and I are based now. And we've got a big storm coming in this weekend. So maybe another snowball fight will erupt this weekend. But we mostly get ice down here, which is really dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not ideal for fighting with, really, is it?
So. Depends. No. Depends who you're fighting.
Well,
could be.
Well, yeah, that is true. Yeah.
Could be a great thing to fight with.
Yeah, not one to take on your nieces and nephews with, though. Let's put it that way.
Probably not.
No, we can't put it off any longer. We have to talk about the week that was. And Matt, I'm wondering, like, we were talking earlier in the season about the good vibes and everything that was building after the defeat against United, after going to Glimpton losing, is that all shattered now?
Yeah, I think so. Like, it's one of those situations where I didn't... Yeah, you're coming into December, you're coming into January, things are going well, we feel like we're picking up, looking to make signings, we've made signings, and things were shaping up for the rebuild, plus the results were going our way. And at points, Arsenal were looking, were dropping points, which gave us a bit of hope, bit of mentality that we could catch them maybe. But yeah, I think after these two results, I think the fans and potentially the players alike are in a bit of disarray right now, I imagine. Yeah.
Well, is it the performances as much as the results? Because the results weren't good before these two defeats. They'd drawn three in a row in the league, but at least the performances were kind of there, whereas now the performances aren't even there either.
Yeah, that's true, David. I'm feeling a bit sick still from losing the derby in that fashion. Just not really turning up, to be fair. So, yeah, the displays are not good, and now the results are not good. But I think to be expected. To be fair, we're just depleted, both in terms of numbers and just energy, I think, and physicality. And the league more and more is so physical. And I think I'm going to put it all down to fitness, really. I think once we get fit, performances and results will revert to the mean, I think.
Yeah, there's almost this sense, though, at the moment, Joey, that the players look just incapable of bouncing back when something's gone against them on the pitch. Mm. It feels as if like it's just going to spiral from there.
Yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of last season, right? Where we had that long streak of just blow a lead at the end of the match, can't figure out how to gain it back. And part of me wonders if it's just a lot of new faces and, you know, maybe they haven't gelled as much as we thought they had a month ago when things were looking better. Certainly the injuries don't help, but I don't know. It just seems there's a lack of, I don't know if it's drive, but they lack a little bit of fight, it seems like, when things go down. And I'm not sure what would cause that, because it seemed like a month ago we were at least starting to climb back up to where we should be.
Yeah, you're right. It's not drive, is it, though? Because, like, as you say, they that kind of implies a level of agency that they're not trying. Mm-hmm. Well, it's like that you don't want to imply that, because it doesn't look like they're not trying. It just looks like what they're trying isn't working, isn't it? That's right. That's kind of how it's going right now.
Yeah, and I don't know how you turn that corner. We struggled with it last year, trying to right the ship a little bit. And I don't know if it's if Pep needs to reinvent again or if it's simply a matter of getting the right players back. You know, he always talks about having his guys and all that kind of thing. Well, we've got what we've had 12 players on the injury list over the past few weeks. Maybe it's just a matter of getting some of those guys back, or maybe they're just exhausted because of this injury thing. They can't pull off what they're trying to do.
Matt, are you worried about just how kind of toothless they've looked in these games? Because that is a little bit of a hangover from the draws as well, where against Sunderland, they created a few chances but missed them. Against Brighton, they created a few chances but missed them. Against Chelsea, they didn't really create the chances. And then against United and Glimpse, they haven't created the chances at all. I mean, the big elephant in the room there is that they did stick 10 pass Exeter in between all of that. But that is League One Exeter.
My concern is not necessarily the results as such, because the way I'm looking at it is in previous seasons, we've always had people to rely on when the going's got tough. And whenever the results haven't been going our way, it's always felt to me like there'll be someone there on the pitch to pick everyone up, to make sure that everyone felt the right way, things were going the right way. This season, it probably is largely due to the injuries, but obviously I don't know what's going on outside of the off the pitch moments. But there, for example, the Bodo Glimpse game is probably a big example of this, where I feel like we made mistakes on the pitch, and there wasn't really anyone on the pitch to kind of pick everyone up, and it felt like we were really lacking leadership as opposed to being toothless. And I think those two things go a bit hand in hand, really. I don't know whether once we get those key players back, those leaders, the results will change. And if you think about it, within a month, we've changed massively, and it's no coincidence that some of the big guys are missing. I think it's already been alluded to. So I think I'm not concerned that we are the kind of team that is just going to perennially be toothless now. But I'm concerned about how long it's going to take for those guys to come back and for the results to pick up, I suppose.
Yeah. The wider context, Mulv, I guess, as well, is as Matt says there, in the past, there was always like, you could always guarantee that De Bruyne might just smack one in, or, you know, Gundogan might just find that pass, or like there might be something, somebody would just do something. And then you look at the names in this City team and you kind of feel like, well, that you should be able to say that about Foden. He might just find the pass. You should be able to say that about Haaland. He just finds the goal from somewhere. But it just isn't happening at the moment. And it just feels a little bit disjointed right now.
I think it's all going wrong at the moment. That's the big problem, is that the injuries, now you add on top, Haaland is having a bit of a Alvaro Negredo style fall off.
We should check his shoulders, shouldn't we? That might be the problem. If he's broken a shoulder, then we've probably worked out why.
But yeah, so you couple your two main, I would say those are two main goal threats, Foden and Haaland. You couple that, them going cold or off the boil, at the same time as all the injuries. And you've got, I mean, it's not, I don't want to make excuses, but there's been a bit of some dodgy refereeing going on as well. So,
well, I was going to come to this because, I mean, if Diogo Dalot was sent off at the start of the game against United, does it, like, Guardiola hinted that it might not change too much. Like, was the performance that bad that it wouldn't have changed too much?
He's just saying that because he doesn't want to make excuses. But we all know that playing this game a man down and a man up is massive. So yeah, you don't know. I can only assume it would have had a pretty big impact on the match, them having 10 men, you know?
Well, at least Howard Webb came out and said they did the right thing. That's really what I care about the most.
That being said, you still get an advantage of that player being on a yellow card at fullback against Jeremy Doku and potentially Semenyo if he would switch and have a run at him. Because now you got Dalot, who's you know, worried about, you know, putting a tackle in, and also you've got in the mind of the referee, ooh, have I, do Do I need to, should that have been a red? Maybe he decides at halftime that should have been a red and mm-hmm. makes up for it with the very first challenge that Delo puts in. So you've got Delo on, you know, on thin ice there, and we just didn't take advantage of it. So, yeah, poor.
Yeah. The thing is, I wonder, Matt, if actually in when you take all of Premier League history, all of football history, if you've got it feels like a trope to say the fullback's on a yellow card, we should be running at him. Like I feel like they never get sent off after that. Like it never ever happens. The fullback never gets sent off for a second yellow card. And then immediately as I'm speaking here, I remember Pablo Zabaleta at Chelsea in Pellegrini's final season being on a yellow card and putting in about four yellow card tackles, not getting booked, and Pellegrini going, actually, you should probably come off now.
is it the way they make the tackles? The tactical fouls, when we've all been privy to a master of tactical fouls, haven't we, in Fernandinho? And maybe the fullbacks have some positional advantage where the referee's not seeing these yellow card challenges going in. I don't
the
know.
The cynicalness of it, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Yeah. That being said, though, Joey, it took Rodri 53 seconds to get two yellow cards in Norway. So, I mean, like, fair play. That's
huge,
some good
respect,
work he's
honestly.
Done there.
From someone that is known for a dodgy tackler, too. Massive respect.
Who,
to pull
who
off two
can
in a
actually find it hard to get booked. He's done it quite quickly there, in quick succession, hasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah. just dumb. Like, the second one's stupid. I think he's trying for a tactical foul, but brother, you've just been booked. Things aren't going good. Maybe let him go or just try to get next to him, shield him, push him the other way. I don't know.
The question is, I guess, like the way the game was going, it was obviously not going well for City, mm-hmm. but like with 60 minutes played, do you take 11 men 4-1 down to try and turn that around, or 10 men against a 3-1 down? What's the calculation there with 30 minutes left?
Can I tell you how much of a psycho I was? I was trying to rationalize in my brain at work while watching on an iPad and pretending to do things that, like, well, hold on now. This might open up a little bit more space with one less player on the pitch. Maybe we got. I know it was wrong, Mark. I'm coping, okay? I'm just trying to deal with what's happening here. It was going bad. And I was like, well, you know, this is, there's a net less, there's one less guy. Maybe we can create more. One of
stretch
the, dumber,
the game a bit more.
Yeah, yeah. One of the dumber thoughts I've ever had. But, you know, I'm just trying to deal with what's going on. And it didn't work.
Desperate times.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. Yeah, desperate times does call for desperate measures mm-hmm. sometimes. I mean, the other side of this, Matt, is that desperate times wise, having a holding midfielder not be there against a team that has continually broken in behind and really exposed the gulfs of space that the two inexperienced centre backs are leaving, probably not ideal.
No, it wasn't ideal. And something that actually, quite funnily enough, I don't know whether this is a good thing on your part or not, but I was listening to the top 10 South American podcast the other day, and you said Fernandinho's name obviously came up, spoilers. Mm. And you mentioned about how he was a master of tactical fouling and how Rodri's in a similar vein, and then immediately the next day after I listened to that podcast, he's gone off for two challenges. But yeah, I think it obviously didn't help, and I think to an even greater extent, I think going back to what I was saying before, just losing an additional, what I would class as a leader on the pitch, and not helping out the what is effectively an academy player and a 21-year-old centre back whose English probably isn't great. He's obviously been here a while now, but I would imagine that combination of no leaders in that back line combined with the potential language barriers has probably not helped with the removal of one of our greatest players and Ballon d'Or winner.
So. Yeah, I think I like Donnarumma behind them for his leadership, but again, his English is still coming on, and he's the goalkeeper. There's only so much he can do from behind the defence as well.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time,
I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Get a dollop of city nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Mulv, we kind of have to look at the goals conceded as well, because there's a pattern to this week. And that pattern seems to be get in behind City, score a goal. Get in behind City, score a goal. Get in behind City. Oh, you're offside this time, but you did score. Get in behind City. Oh, you're offside again, but you might. I mean, some of these might go for you, might go against you. It's been a bit alarming, hasn't it?
It has. I mean, the offsides don't surprise me. That's our big strategy, isn't it? A lot of teams going to find themselves offside against our high line. And in fact, maybe that's one of the positives for a back line in recent weeks. It's been a bit makeshift and hasn't played together much to stay in line like that is, I guess, a credit to them. But a lot of the problem is what's happening.
This bar is on the floor, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking for positives.
Really
here,
reaching here.
I did a Joey style mind bend there.
Hell yeah.
Anyways, a lot of the problems, what's going on in front of them, obviously, our press has not returned to former heights. You're missing Nunez, obviously, who's been a bit of a revelation in terms of defending against transitions with his pace. And then occasionally Pep will decide not to play Nico O'Reilly on the left, which always a massive mistake. Swapping him out with anybody else at this point, he's been great. Make sure he's fit for the Manchester derby next time, please. The press is we're still working on that, and thank God for Kucinov, whose pace and interceptions have bailed us out a few times, or otherwise, and Donnarumma, of course. Otherwise, it could be a lot worse than it was.
For sure. I guess the selection question, Joey, was if you'd have told me at the start of the day with going to Norway that Ryan Aitnori, that Nico O'Reilly, and that Rico Lewis were in the team, I'd have had a pretty good guess at going who was right back, who was left back, and who was in midfield.
Yeah.
And what happened was it seemed to be that Guardiola put them in one of those Tombola machines and rolled them around, and they just kind of all switched positions.
Yeah, yeah. It seemed like he had like a – you ever played Yahtzee, where it's just a cup?
Yes.
Same deal. Put him in there, threw him on the ground, and wherever the dice landed, he was like, okay, well, Ryan – Great news. You're playing on the right, brother. I don't know what to tell you. When the lineup came out, it was pretty obvious where they should be. And then when they weren't there, it was pretty obvious as soon as the first goal happened, what should happen. You know, they just, all right, just reshuffle him, Pep. Aitnori doesn't know what he's doing on the right. Positionally, especially defensively, he was all over the place or nowhere to be seen, depending on how you look at it. And when it came to going,
I always love all over the place as an expression with football, because it can be good or bad depending on how you say
yeah.
it. He was all over the place today.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
He was all over the place today. Yeah. Terrible.
And then going forward, it seemed like the right leg was just for standing on. So he kind of turned into just a cone out there where anytime it went to him, you knew it was just going onto his left foot and going back or sideways. And at that point, if you know he's struggling defensively and he's not giving you anything going forward, and there's a guy in there with an 82 on his back that, while not the best in the world, is certainly better than that at right back. And there's a guy on the left that you can that is a midfielder. Just move him. Get it over with. Rip the Band-Aid off. You goofed, you know? We all make mistakes. Own it. Change it. And don't just stick with it out of, I don't know, sheer stubbornness. It only went on to hurt us.
What I will say, Matt, and forgive me for playing devil's advocate here, but it's kind of what I have to do. In the Manchester derby, Rico Lewis played right back and was overwhelmed, struggled quite a lot in that position. And then here we are all saying that when it came to the midweek, Guardiola should have just put Rico Lewis at right back. And that kind of feels a bit like having your cake and eating it.
Yeah, I think we're in one of those situations at the moment where I think regardless of where positionally we put some of these players that we have, just because of injuries and not having the leaders on the pitch, as mentioned previously, I don't quite think it's going to make too much of a difference right now. I think we're clearly in a period of uncertainty. And a bit uncomfortable, really. I don't think it would have made a difference.
Mm. Do you? Would you have been happy to accept a refund for travelling over there from the players if you got it? Because I feel a bit. I was going to say, do you think it's right that the players refunded the travelling fans? But like, I'm not. I didn't spend $2,000 or so on a trip to Norway, so it's not my position to say whether it's right that they got a refund or not. But I do wonder if the players are basically going, yeah, we balls this, lads. Sorry.
I can see the rationale behind it, and I understand that if you were a travelling fan, it obviously quite nice to get a bit of a windfall from a loss. But my first thought was, oh no, we're that bad that we're now refunding fans. which wasn't great.
Mm. Mulf, would you have accepted that refund? Oh, yeah. Obviously you would. Why would I ask that question?
Turn down money in this economy?
Most definitely.
Joey, I don't know if you know this story, but Alfie Haaland, Erling Haaland's dad, once paid for some fans' petrol coming back after a 4-0 defeat at Charlton. So it runs in the family.
That's what's up. Yeah, yeah, nice. I wish somebody would do that for me.
Yeah, well, we are going to leave the past behind us now. We're going to look forward to the upcoming games because it's Wolves and Galatasaray to come. And we will start by checking in with Dave Azzopardi from Talking Wolves to get his thoughts about making the trip to the Etihad this weekend.
You look at our form up until Christmas, really, and I mean, at that point, we hadn't won a Premier League game. We were really struggling to pick up points. And strangely, since the turn of the year, it's been okay. I think we started just after Christmas, we'd lost at Anfield, but we made a really decent account of ourselves against Liverpool. We then got a point against United at Old Trafford. And then we really kicked on this year as well. So beating West Ham to finally grab our first league win, you know, beat them really comfortably and draws against Newcastle and Everton. You know, Everton away, Newcastle at home, can't really be sniffed at as well as a big win in the FA Cup. So, I think it sort of, we saw, I mean, we'll probably come on to it, but we saw signs of improvement under Rob Edwards, but it's been a really solid run of form. And this is a really big test now for Wolves' unbeaten run, a real tough trip to Man City.
Yeah, we'll come to that in a second. I'm interested because obviously, like, the start of the season was so bad that it put you in such a difficult position. Is there a part of you now that's thinking we might do this?
I think there is still a small part of me, but I think unfortunately, like you said, it's probably with how bad the start of the season was, I think it is probably too little too late for Wolves, which is a shame really. But you know, you never know. I think it was frustrating last weekend because in isolation, the point against Newcastle is actually an okay point. But then when you look at the rest of the teams, West Ham had won, Forest and Burnley both picked up points. So it was a little bit frustrating. But maybe, but I think it's such a stretch at the moment. We'd have to go on a fantastic run of form. You know, I think there's a sort of a 4 or 5 game swing that we'd need to achieve to even leapfrog Forest. So it's going to be tough. I would say never, you know, we won 6 on the bounce last season under Vitor Pereira, and ultimately that guided us to safety. So there's every chance that we can hopefully miraculously pull something off like that again. But I think most realistic Wolves fans are still expecting us, unfortunately, to go down and be in the Championship next season.
Yeah. Are you, I mean, I suppose the other question is, have you got that, your eye on that Derby points record, and are thinking as long as we get more than that?
Yeah, that was the worry for me. I think sort of early December, mid-December, especially when Rob Edwards had sort of got his feet under the table at that point, and he still hadn't found any points. That was a concern for me. I remember at the start of the season when we started off quite poorly after like 3 or 4 games, people were asking me about that. And I thought, that is just such a ridiculous statement to make. And then it got to about December and I thought, oh gosh. So thankfully, because of the points that we picked up now, I think we should be okay. But it was a worry that come December, that was the only aim for me, to make sure we didn't register ourselves as the worst Premier League team of history. So I think now, fingers crossed, we should beat that record. And it's just about... giving ourselves a bit of dignity now. First aim for me is obviously to beat that record. Secondly is then trying to leapfrog Burnley and, you know, getting to 19th, which I still think between now and the end of the season is possible.
Yeah. Let's talk Rob Edwards then, because obviously he was appointed kind of mid-November time. What's changed under him? What do you think is different now about Wolves than the Wolves that City played at the start of the season?
There's a little bit more organisation. I think there's a little bit more fight. I think he's sort of discovered the players that actually want to be here and fight between now and the summer, at least. I think I mentioned this on our podcast because I think that reverse fixture against City, obviously it was the first game of the season. It was a really weird game. Obviously, we were sort of celebrating the life of Diogo Jota throughout that game. And I actually think we started off okay. I think we had a goal disallowed and it could have been such a different game. And as you would have seen many times following Manchester City, sometimes, you know, City grab one goal and they can, you know, smash 2 or 3 past the team quite quickly after that as well. So I think, after that game, Vitor Pereira really struggled to, number one, find his best 11. He just kept chopping and changing it. And like I mentioned earlier, he just had no organisation. I think he possibly just got a little bit overexcited at the back end of last season when we won 6 on the bounce. He was going out for drinks with fans. And I think for him, it almost felt a little bit too easy. And then he's coming to it this season. He lost Cunha, 8 Nori to yourself, Semedo. And he's like, right, I've actually got to try and manage a team and construct a football team now. And the quality of recruitment when he was given a lot of charge during that was awful. And we're sort of trying to fix that as we speak now. So, we're just seeing a little bit more organisation. I know it was difficult at the time when Rob Edwards joined us. You know, a lot of Middlesbrough fans in particular were sort of kicking up a fuss about that. And, you know, the whole sort of narrative about Rob joining Wolves was because of his connections to the club and, you know, living close by and things like that. And, you know, I think you can see that. I think he was unlucky. He went 7 games without picking up a point in his first 7. And I think there were just slow signs of encouragement, and now it's all almost starting to fall into play. So that's what we're just becoming a lot more difficult to beat. I think we play that game against Newcastle under Vitor Pereira, they could have knocked 2 or 3 goals past us. But you know, we're giving some good teams, some teams looking at European football this season, really difficult matches at the moment.
Yeah, is there sort of like the idea of like the acceptance that you'll go down this season, but Rob Edwards is the sort of manager that could bring you straight back up?
I think that was the idea. Yeah, I think like quietly, you know, the club can't exactly publicly go, right, we're going down, but you know, yeah. But I think, you know, internally, I'm sure that there was conversations about that. You know, he's got decent experience of the Football League. You know, he's got ties. He's not a bad manager. You know, look at his record and the games he's won and the promotions that he's earned in his time across his career so far. I think you give him a chance, get used to the environment, get used to players, try and get players on side to hopefully stay for next season as well. And yeah, hopefully have a really good crack at it next season. I'm hoping, and obviously it's still very, very early to say, I'm hoping that he can continue with decent form between now and the end of the season, just to make sure he's got as many fans on side as he can, because pre-Christmas, when he hadn't won in 7, as you can imagine, fans were saying, right, this is the wrong decision. We probably need to even move him on before the end of the campaign. So I'm grateful now that he's starting to pick up a few points. He's starting to get fans on side. And hopefully he can do the same with players. And I know how bad we've been, but I think some of those players would still be very, very good, have a very good quality in the second tier next season if we do go down.
Yeah, and just looking at this game at the weekend then, how do you think he'll approach it? Because I guess under normal circumstances, coming to the Etihad might be a difficult prospect. But having watched, having seen City basically be shambolic against both Manchester United and Bodo Glimt, I wonder if his game plan might be different.
It'll be interesting because I think we haven't had the best of luck against you guys at your place ever since Nuno moved on, really. You know, I always felt we gave you a pretty good game there. And the one I remember is the year we got the double over you, but that was just a perfect counter-attacking performance. And I think this is probably going to have to be the same on Saturday. And I know City, it's almost, on paper, it's probably a good time, but I think it probably is quite a bad time because you're just almost going to have to expect a reaction of some sorts from Manchester City as well. So I think, you know, I didn't watch the game against United in its entirety, but just every time they seemed to attack, you know, they were getting in behind, they would catch you on the counter-attack. And I think that's what Wolves' only hope, really. I'm not expecting us to go to the Etihad and dominate possession and things like that. And he has made, typically away from home, I think we've played better under Rob Edwards, and he's made life very difficult. Even the Arsenal game, they ended up beating us 2-1 with a late goal in the end, but we made life so difficult for them. Liverpool the same, Manchester United obviously we grabbed the point. So I would expect it might be a job of sort of 10, 11 men behind the ball and look to launch counter-attacks when we can, as you would expect to see probably 90% of the Premier League set up against City. It's just about what quality can Wolves create when they get the opportunity in that final third?
Yeah, what quality have you got in that? Because certainly the last couple of games, City have been really struggling with quick transitions, balls in behind. If you've got pace and you've got players who can create something, like, do you feel like you have a chance there?
Yes, but my concern still with Wolves is that lack of creativity. I think against Newcastle in particular, obviously they finished goalless defensively. It was almost a flawless display, but going forward, we just still lacked something. I think if you look in terms of our attacking players at the moment, there's the big striker, 6'6", Tolu Arokodare, who is gaining quite a lot of praise from neutrals, but, you know, 50-50s wise, aerial duels he's fantastic with, but actually contributing to an attack, it's difficult. And to be fair to him, he's not getting the service. I think if you're getting him in the box, whether it's on the floor, fantastic finisher, or if it's aerially, you know, you've got a chance, but we're not getting that service to him. Matthias Mane, you know, young lad from, you know, grew up in Rochdale as well, not a million miles away from you guys. You know, he's really kicked on since the turn of the year as well. Rob Edwards has given him that opportunity and he's taken it with both hands, starting to contribute, getting goals, scored in back-to-back Premier League games. So he's got a little bit about him. He's almost got a no fear factor to him, and he'll pick up the ball at the Etihad on Saturday and he'll drive forward with it as if, you know, he's won the Ballon d'Or for the last 3 years. You know, he's got no fear, he's got so much quality as well, and really they're the only two that we're relying on. The wing backs are improving slightly, so we might get some joy down the wide areas, but in terms of pace and bringing the ball forward at the moment, there's not one player I can pinpoint and think he's going to be the difference maker on Saturday. Just depends. We have got quality there, but the players are blown so hot and cold at the moment. It just depends who's going to turn up, I think.
Yeah, well, good luck on this one then, because it's charity bet time. What's your score prediction? How do you think it'll go?
If I'm honest, I think City probably will turn a corner and sort of put their wrongs right on Saturday. But as you know, whenever I come on here, I always try and back my team to a degree. I don't think we'll win Saturday, if I'm honest, David, but I'll be semi-positive. I'll go with a 1-1 draw.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try Assemble and Bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Dave Azzopardi. Joey, tell me that I am not being doomist here. Wolves have won 1 and drawn 5 all season, but they're unbeaten in 2026. Given City's recent form, we are all thinking it, aren't we?
Yeah. My greatest fear is that Wolves will earn their S back. we've said on our show that they can't be called Wolves until they get some wins. I do worry that it's going to be us. I guess Gahey should be available. Semenyo should be available. Like, that's two positives, I would say. But everything else around him is just not firing right now. And it is not beyond the realm of possibility that we absolutely shit the bed and give him a win. You know, like I don't think you can look at any club right now after we got slapped by Bodo Glimt and say, yeah, we're definitely beating them. There's no evidence to point to that.
Although Exeter City might have a few concerns about that line of thinking, but yeah,
that was years ago.
It was last week.
Nah.
Matt, the other side of this is, I don't know if you remember last season, Southampton needed a point to avoid being the worst Premier League side of all time. And do you remember who gave them that point?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, it was City. Wolves need 3 points to avoid being the worst Premier League team of all time.
Well, it feels like a kindness, doesn't it, for us then to give them those? Because that's
true.
What we do.
Charity.
Yeah, we're just thinking selflessly. We're not in this title race seriously anymore. I mean, in all seriousness, though, like, Arsenal have now not punished City for dropping points twice. The gap is 7 points. Like, City's form is on the floor. But they are still alive, and Arsenal are not killing them. So there is still something there, isn't there?
It feels like the cadence of the season, though, doesn't it? Like, I feel like we're never going to get out of that kind of stretch of whenever Arsenal potentially might not lose points or drop points for the rest of the season, but it kind of goes hand in hand with the way we're performing right now, and I can't see any uptick in performance that we'd be able to catch them, because I'm going to go out on a limb and say that we're going to probably drop points at some point in for the rest of the season. I think it's interesting because I think we can get 91 points still if we win all of our remaining games, and we've won the season not only 2 years ago with 91 points. So it is possible. But,
simply win every game.
But Arsenal could also get 98 points. So, yeah.
Yeah, crucially not 100 though, which is good.
Facts.
Mulv, just on that as well. Like Arsenal aren't punishing City right now, but as Matt says, you kind of expect them not to keep doing that. Is the worry that City will kill themselves before Arsenal get the chance to kill them?
Very possibly. Are injuries killing yourself? I mean, getting two yellows in the space of a minute—that's definitely killing yourself.
It's about how much of this is self-inflicted at this stage, because Guardiola's hand is kind of forced with what he can do at the moment.
You got Max Lane who's a couple of Bozo moments crept in, so that killing ourselves a little bit there as well. I don't know. I don't really know how to answer that, David. It's the injuries, and then obviously we're combining that at the moment with some individual errors that are killing us.
Mm. So what do you need to see, do you think, from the team in these two games? Because like is it a case of like even it, like if the results are not going to be good enough, the performances at least need to get back up there? Or is it a case now of they just have to win? I don't really care how it happens, but they need 3 points on Saturday. They need to beat Galatasaray.
Yes, it's actually the results, I think, because the results are what's going to get the vibe back. Mm-hmm. You know, get the results by hook or by crook, and get some positivity back in and build on that in terms of performances. And again, I think the performances will improve as we get fitter. But right now, I was expecting, my expectations were quite low for the season in that I thought we would see a smoother, steadier improvement in that maybe two, win two, lose one, win two, draw one sort of thing, win one, lose one, you know. But it's been like win eight, you know, draw three, lose two. You know what I mean? Like almost not fully back to square one, but, you know,
you're taking the scenic route to square one, aren't we? That's what we're doing.
Much more of a roller coaster than I was expecting. So I wasn't expecting us to win the league, but I was expecting a steady improvement over time. And I've been shocked by just the up and down nature of the past few weeks. So. Hopefully we can arrest that sort of wildness and get back to that steady growth.
Yeah, it kind of creeps up on you sometimes as well, though, because we all thought they'd done that, and then New Year's Day happened, and since then it's just been a bit of a wild kind of fall, and we're going to get the climb back again on the roller coaster soon, hopefully. Joey, you mentioned Semenyo and Gehi being available for this one. How much does that change the dynamic? Because if Max Alain can come out for this one and just have like he's been thrown in at the deep end and he's done really well, but you'd need to not keep putting pressure on a young player like that. Yeah. So if you can make that change there, and if you can get some fresh legs into the front line, because it's obvious Jeremy Doku just isn't back to fitness yet. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I hope it's a lift. I think if Gehi's back there, it's at least kind of a proven Premier League leader. Like he's captain at Palace, you know, England international, blah blah blah. It's at least someone back there with. Ruben's voice not being in the team for a little bit. I think you need someone back there that's willing to, even if he's the new guy, have a go at players and at least try to drum up some sort of fire in them to push on. Yeah, fresh legs up front. It's just, I'd love it. You know, hopefully Marmoush can do something, but you know, he's been pretty, I mean, similar to how the team's form is right now, where he's just been so up and down at his time at City. And I don't really know, aside from Marmoush, I don't know who else you throw up there, because you figure it'll be Semenyo and either Marmoush or Cherki if Doku rests. And it's been kind of hit and miss with some of them. Like Cherki can be, he seems like he runs real hot and cold right now. Semenyo, similar to Doku, didn't run at a fullback on a yellow for 70 minutes or 80 minutes, whatever it was. I don't know. I hope it's a lift, but there's a mentality thing they've got to flip a switch and try to find that killer instinct again, or could be in for an even bigger world of hurt, I think.
Yeah, speaking of killer instinct, Matt, Haaland is struggling in front of goal right now. Foden hasn't been able to influence games. I mean, is there a world in which neither of them starts at the weekend with the players that City have available again? If you can bring Marmoush in for Haaland, or if you can, as Joey says, rotate the options in the centre of the midfield and give Foden some time out. Like, it's absolutely crazy to say it, but... like Guardiola keeps saying Haaland is exhausted, and yes, he's the man most likely to score a goal that the Premier League has ever seen, but if he's knackered and can't move, maybe you do need to do a bit of management with him.
I was really surprised that Marmoush didn't start against Bodo Glimt. Mm. And I think I understand that he's obviously been at AFCON, and the negative spin on that is that he's been away, he's travelled back and gone immediately to Norway for a Champions League game. But the way I looked at it was that he's been scoring goals through Egypt at AFCON, and he's at a time when Haaland hasn't been scoring goals and looks exhausted. He looks up for it. He looks ready to play. He's, like I say, he's scoring goals. So it was a big shock that he didn't start. And I think taking him, bringing him on, Haaland, it just felt like it wasn't the right call to make. And I really stand by a lot of things that Pep does, and I would never be a Pep out person. That's not my thing.
That's the official position of this podcast, by the way.
Exactly.
That Pep Guardiola should continue to manage Manchester City.
Exactly.
We're not really one for controversial takes here.
No. So when I say this, I'm not saying it from that perspective, but I feel like this season has been the season where I have been a bit more concerned about some of the player choices at a time when players look exhausted and they're being continually used to not great effect. And I think similar with Foden, he doesn't look like he's there all there at the moment. There's clearly something not quite right with him, and I don't know whether it's because he's not that guy that we thought he was. He's not the leader in midfield that we thought he could be and was kind of the elect from Kevin De Bruyne. And I don't think Kevin De Bruyne's really been replaced on that mentality front and being the guy who could pull you out of the trenches, with Foden being kind of as inconsistent as he has been in the past couple of seasons.
Yeah, Mulv, is there a world in which you think Guardiola doesn't start? I mean, Foden could come in or out. We have seen that this season, but Haaland plays when he's fit. So is there, like, he is going to play against Wolves, isn't he? That is just how it works.
I don't know, you know. I mean, he's talked about needing Marmoush in order to rest Haaland, and that. We're here now. He's back, and we need a bit of freshness up front. And
it's bottom of the Premier League at home.
Yeah, but I think they're going to defend deep, and we've really, really been struggling against that type of defending of late. And somebody with a little bit more dynamic in terms of holding on to the ball and linking up in Marmoush, I think could be a nice, refreshing decision. And give Erling Haaland something to think about as well. I mean, I struggled a little bit with your question earlier about, are we killing ourselves? And, you know, I mentioned the poor lad, Max Alain, and I should be talking more about probably Erling Haaland, who in that series of three draws that we had a few weeks ago, was really struggling with his finishing. And that could have made all the difference in, you know, those three draws, if you turn two of those into wins, it's a different story now in terms of the points gap. I think it's the right time to try Marmoush up front, and maybe with it being Wolves, no disrespect, but they're struggling, might be the perfect time to get Marmoush in actually against somebody, you know, not an elite team. So
yeah. Well, we'll come to that shortly. And Joey, the other problem that we've got this week, I guess, now is, yes, Bernardo is now available again for Galatasaray, but Rodri now isn't. And assuming that Nico Gonzalez isn't going to be fit either, that big gaping hole that was in front of the defence is still going to be there.
Yeah, not ideal. Not great, not good. And I don't know who you plug in. Mulv and I talked about it on our show. I thought maybe we could see Nico O'Reilly in the six against Bodo Glimt, depending on who was fit around him. I don't want to see Bernardo as a six against Galatasaray. Unless Nico makes some, or Nico Gonzalez makes some miraculous recovery, Pep's going to have to go makeshift six. And my fear is it's a repeat of last season, where he was just trying to plug and play anybody in that position to get something out of them. whatever he does with the six, he's going to have to pull those eights in tighter and try to eliminate the space around that position, because we cannot go in there with a makeshift six and just let Sané and Icardi and Gundo and whoever else.
I was going to say it's going to be run, fun, isn't it? Watching the players that City let go because they couldn't run through City again this season.
Yeah, I got a feeling that they might dunk on us a little bit with that.
You know, Pep might be our only available six.
True. On that one. I think I've got a good 20 minutes.
Can he register himself?
Hey, if he's registering him, get Colo Torre back in there. Facts. And yeah.
Yeah, it'll be like 2006 all over again. Matt, it's looking like a playoff will now be needed for the Champions League for City. It's not the end of the world. I should stress that an extra game is not the end of the world. But at the same time, like, they kind of could have done with that week off.
Yeah. Obviously it's not ideal. But I haven't looked into what games are around when the playoffs would be, but I assume it might be somewhere around maybe an FA Cup game at the weekend or a Premier League game. But yeah, it's not the end of the world. But at a time when a lot of players are struggling for fitness, it obviously doesn't help.
Yeah, a quick Google suggests the 17th and 18th and 24th and 25th of February.
Salford and Newcastle.
Yeah, so Newcastle, tricky. Salford, you would hope, wouldn't pose as many problems as other teams, you know, like Bodo Glimt or Manchester United, the rubbish teams like that. We'll see how that goes. As you can expect, it's another week of no predictions correct on the last show, so we remain on £280 for the charity bet so far this season. That money is going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group, who will be collecting outside the Etihad on Saturday before the game with Wolves. Go and see them with a donation if you can. They'll be under the bridge near Asda up until about 2:30 p.m. William Hill is giving us three £10 correct score singles to try and raise some more money for them. We heard that Dave Azzopardi went for a plucky 1-1 draw on Saturday. That is 12-1 and £120 if he's right. Matt, what are you having for the visit of Wolves?
I've gone for 3-2 to City.
3-2 City is 18-1 and £180. Now, because of the format of today's show and the fact that I've invited three guests, we have one prediction between the two of you. So, Joey and Mulv, I've asked you to collaborate on a prediction for Wolves. Explain to me, did you have to fight it out for this one to let the positive vibes or the negative vibes win out?
I think I just decided.
Yeah, I just let Mulv, I just let Mulv run on that. My decision would be first come, first serve. Decidedly less chill than a 3-1 to City.
Yeah, well, they've got 3-1 to City, so if it comes in, we'll give all the credit to Mulv on that one. 9-1 and £90 if you are right. That brings us to Galatasaray, and because I am abdicating my responsibility of making any sort of predictions, I'm giving you one each for this one now. So Mulv, what are you having for Galatasaray?
I think I've gone for a 1-1.
Yeah, you have. 9-1 with that. £90 if you're right on that one as well. Joey, we'll come to you in a second. Matt, what are you having?
Cheers, Matt.
I've gone for 2-2. Enough time to give Gundogan and Sané a goal each. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, inevitable. That's 16-1 and £160 if you're right. Joey, explain yourself.
I don't think I need to explain it too much. I've gone 2-1 Galatasaray because of we don't have a six. The back line average age is 12. We've been sorry, I hit two buttons at once.
I did phone voice for a second.
yeah, no, I'm just not. I'm not. I'm kind of doom and gloom about this, and I don't think that's crazy. I know it's a City show and all that, but. There's no evidence right now that points me to say that we're going to win against the Champions League side with no six and who knows at the back, and we can't score goals.
You do you. It's whatever you want to do. I'm the one that gets the emails. 22-1 if you're right. £220. Yeah. So if it does come in, at least you'll practically double the pot for the charity.
Yeah. At
so
David, pay out, at David Mooney on all socials.
yeah, that's the one. Yeah.
I am not on anything.
Just send me the abuse and I'll forward it on. That's what I'll do. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for information on responsible gambling, have a look at gambleaware.org.
So here's the thing with homemade meals. Eating them is great, but all the chopping and measuring and cleanup, not so much. With new one-pan assemble and bake meals from Blue Apron, you get all the flavor of homemade meals with a fraction of the work. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients, bake in the oven, and enjoy. Shop Assemble and Bake at BlueApron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit BlueApron.com/terms for more.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app, with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Now, hopefully not, but on Wednesday night, Ilkay Gundogan or Leroy Sané, or both of them, could become the 18th and 19th players to score at the Etihad for the opposition as well as for City. That's when Galatasaray come to town in the final Champions League group game. This is the Blue Moon Podcast, so you know the drill by now. Here's a look at all the others who've scored for and against City at the Etihad. Nicolas Anelka became the first to do it.
Nolan to the cross, back in towards Anelka! It had to be, didn't it? Nicolas Anelka against his former club with 8 minutes played.
Bolton have it now with Henrik Pedersen. Duke and Anelka in good positions. It's Pedersen with a run through, and he's got his second. Nicolas Anelka has done it again.
That was his brace for Bolton in December 2006. He'd previously scored 20 times for City at Eastlands before he left, including the first ever goal there that came in a friendly with Barcelona. In 2008, he became the first and so far only player to score for a third club at the stadium when he netted for Chelsea in a 3-1 away win.
Here's Joe Cole, and here is Nicolas Anelka, who might just have settled it.
Anelka is one of three players to score a brace at Eastlands for the opposition whilst also scoring there at some point in their career for City. Emmanuel Adebayor was the second.
Webb now for Sanya, and he's got through, and Adebayor, and it's in, and Arsenal have an early lead. Oh, nicely done, Fabregas, Webb, and Adebayor, trust him to finish it off.
That was his double for Arsenal in February 2008. He would have been the third brace scorer in the club had Roque Santa Cruz got his act together, though. His double for Blackburn was earlier than Adebayor's was for Arsenal, but he took 2 months longer than Adebayor to score for City at Eastlands. And, weirdly, despite scoring for two teams at the City of Manchester Stadium, all of Santa Cruz's goals came there under the management of Mark Hughes.
Split shot in it! Roque Santa Cruz again!
And he's in there, and there's the equalising goal!
No other players have scored braces for the opposition, but like Anelka, there are two others that have scored on more than one occasion. Although, unlike Anelka, they both did it for the same team each time. Anelka did it for Bolton and Chelsea, remember. Most recently, Kelechi Iheanacho scored for Leicester, first in 2021.
Maddison with a bit of room, might take it on, he does. Oh, Edison against the bar, and Iheanacho! Leicester City are right bang back in the game now.
And then in 2023.
Two big targets from Edison to Weymouth. Suter in by Iheanacho.
after Edison could only parry it. Phillips in front of him and against his old team.
But a lot of these goals are going to be linked to Chelsea, so let's go back to them. Not only was Anelka the first to score for and against City at Eastlands, he was also the first to do it for a team that he also scored against there for City. Still with me? In short, he scored there for City against Chelsea and for Chelsea against City. Frank Lampard has done the same, starting in 2007.
Good play from him, and it's gone down. Is that a penalty kick? The referee points to the spot. Up against Isaacson. 1-0 to Chelsea.
Then he scored again in 2008.
And Lampard, the Luda wide of him, and Anelka through the middle. Lampard. Lampard! What a finish that is!
After that, Lampard then scored his first Etihad goal for City against Chelsea. That was an equaliser in 2014. One other player has done this. Wilfred Bonny scored for City against Swansea in 2015, about a year after he'd scored for Swansea at the Etihad.
Now it's Nathan Dyer. Sigurdsson has made an intelligent run inside the box. Dyer, beautifully found. It's Bonny who's onside! Swansea City are causing big problems for English football's big hitters again.
Bonny is one of a number of players that scored for City after scoring at the Etihad for the opposition. Defender Joleon Lescott was the first to do it in the league when he scored for Everton in 2008.
Lescott still forward. It's two. Joleon Lescott takes his bow. And Everton's superiority in this game now being properly reflected.
Samir Nasri scored for Arsenal in 2010.
Shaq and Arshavin lurking in the middle here for Arsenal. Nasri, Arshavin, Nasri, wonderful from Arsenal. Simply wonderful.
And Riyad Mahrez scored for Leicester in 2016.
Well, through towards Mahrez, who's got clear of Otamendi. Riyad Mahrez! 2-0 Leicester!
There are actually two others who scored at the Etihad before joining City and then scoring there for City as well, but they didn't do it in competitive games. Both of them came in the old pre-season friendly, the Thomas Cook Trophy, where Yaya Toure opened the scoring for Olympiacos in 2005, and then David Silva did the same for Valencia in 2007. Time for another Chelsea connection, though. No player has scored more goals at the Etihad when scoring there for and against City than Raheem Sterling. He got 69 there for City, and then his 70th was for Chelsea in 2024.
Jackson, Sterling near side, no City player near him. And Raheem Sterling checks back and scores against his former club.
It might feel like it, but that isn't the most recent example, however. That honour goes to the only goal that was scored by a returning player in the Champions League. It was by Brahim Diaz for Real Madrid last season.
It's Vinicius, and it came back. And that is 2-2, and it's Brahim Diaz who is almost reluctant to celebrate in front of his former supporters.
Meanwhile, going back to New Year's Day 2015, there was a home game with Sunderland where both of the opposition scorers had previously scored for City at the Etihad. The second was a penalty by a former City winger. The first was this from Jack Rodwell.
Larson, good header, one back. Jack Rodwell wheels away.
Now, if you've been keeping count, that's 18 of 20 goals by 15 of 17 players. The other two who have scored for and against City at Eastlands both got their away goals for Liverpool. The first was Daniel Sturridge in 2013.
Still not clear, Gerrard. And Sturridge scores! Fabulous hit, no celebration, and much fury inside the Etihad.
And the second was a penalty by James Milner in 2017.
Dabbed up towards Firmino, onside, and denied a shot by Clichy, against whom a penalty is given. James Milner so calm, so very, very calm.
So there you have it. Every single player that has scored for and against City in the club's 22 and a half seasons at the Etihad. With the way things have gone this week, though, it's probably not unexpected that Ilkay Gundogan or Leroy Sané or both could have added themselves to this list by this time next week.
G'day, I'm Danny Tiara, and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast, but don't worry, it'll be over soon.
Matt, there must be some that sting of players that have returned. Anelka was the one for me when he became the first one to do it when Bolton came back. And I remember thinking, like, I always thought Anelka was too good for City, but he's now at Bolton.
Do you know what? I always quite have a good affinity with former players.
Easy and, for you to say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I always wish nothing but good things for them, unless they slander us massively and then nothing but hatred.
Ah, so we're booing James Milner, aren't we?
Yes. Forever.
No comment.
No comment at all. Joey, any particularly painful ones for you when you see the ball go in and it's an ex-player running away with their arm in the air?
I don't think any of them hurt too much. Mainly because I celebrated the Adebayor one too hard. So I can't really look at other players and be like, how dare you? When I was like, yes, run all the way down the pitch and knee slide in front of them. Throw a latte in their face. But yeah, I mean, if Leroy and Gundo score, I'm going to be in a bad place mentally, probably. I won't handle that well. I don't handle most things well, but that one will hit.
Really? You don't strike me as someone who's...
I know. I seem pretty level-headed, composed even. Turns out, not the case. There's a reason I have like a signed picture of Alex Kolarov just chilling next to me. It's kind of like he's my emotional compass, and he was mostly just kill, murder, kill. I think.
Yeah, Mulv, if like because some of these scored for the opposition before they scored for City at the Etihad. Mm-hmm. So like Frank Lampard, for instance, scored for Chelsea before he scored for City. And when Lampard scored against Chelsea, there's only several types of hands in this world. You've got the apologetic hands that Lampard did when he scored. Yeah. I mean, you've got like jazz hands, like somebody could bust out the jazz hands. But like, if one of Sane or Gundogan scored, what are you expecting? Like Gundogan would be a I'm not celebrating guy. Sane might celebrate.
Ooh, I don't know. You know, I have played through these in my head already. I totally agree with you on Gundogan. That would be a sort of head down, slowly walk back to the middle through a crowd of teammates trying to get you to celebrate.
I'm terribly sorry, everyone, but I've just scored against you. It's like if you feel that bad about it, don't score the goal, mate.
Yeah,
I can just see the life force leaving his body if he was to score against City, because you just know how much he loves City. Although, and that's why I say I'm not so sure about Sane, because I'm pretty sure he's still in love with the club. Mm. From all I can tell off what I've seen on social media, and I think his partner's Mancunian, is that right? And a City fan? I'm not sure, but I think there's still an affinity there. So, it would surprise me if Sane celebrated with any sort of gusto.
If Sane did hit jazz hands and like a real song and dance man shuffle down the touchline, though, I wouldn't be mad. That would be hilarious. It's a great bit. If he's just like, really? Yeah, da, 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 and like shuffling down the side. Are you kidding me? How do you not laugh at that?
Down in my estimation.
All right.
Down in my estimation with that.
Not a guy for fun. Mulv got you down.
Yeah. I mean, on the right show this week, given the state of the world and the football right now.
When you messaged us, you called this a hospital ball.
It was a hospital pass. Yeah, yeah, it's an absolute hospital pass to come on this one. I put a post on socials this week saying, on Wednesday, saying I probably should have booked guests before this week just in case that happened.
Mm-hmm.
All the big boys are scrambling for somebody to come on, and they're like, I know who will do it. Let me get them two idiots.
Hey, your words, not mine. Your words, not mine.
It's in the profile, brother. We're self-admitted idiots.
Right, let's finish with a listener question. Get in touch on Blue Sky at bluemoonpodcast.com. You can email contact at bluemoonpodcast.com as well. You can find us on Instagram. I've been terrible at putting the stories up with the little box in that lets you send questions, but you can send us messages on there, and I do see them. Just search for Blue Moon Podcast on there. Joel has been in touch on the emails to say, is it me, or does it feel like the mainstream media is starting to exploit fans like those on this and other City podcasts? There's been a lot of backlash towards Fanzone Danny and Big Steve for going into the box on Sky. And while I don't really blame them for doing it, providing that they were paid, I do wonder what Sky have to gain from it. They're asking fans to give up their experience of being at the game in order to make something that other fans can laugh at or ridicule, essentially farming that engagement for those clicks. When you listen to what Steve or Danny or others say about City, they speak excellently about the club. So wouldn't media organisations get a more honest view of City fans by actually engaging with their opinions instead of putting them into bizarre formats for clicks? Matt, what do you reckon to this? Because this is, I guess this is the shittification of football media, is it?
Yeah, we do live in a bit of an everything now world, don't we, where people are just scrolling for like for content and easy wins on social media where people can find and look at your video and get a like is very valuable these days. So I think
I think actually both Steve and Danny they've both posted on socials that they didn't enjoy the experience and it wasn't a good experience.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a shame really because it's been a bit of a rod to beat them with on social media. I've noticed. I don't really go on X anymore. But from what I've seen, other fans of other clubs have been using it to bash them a bit and kind of bringing up their allegiance to the club and calling it into question, which I think is really unfair. Like, I think I would imagine that both of them have done their fair stint of away football matches and derbies.
They've put the hard yards in, haven't they?
Yeah,
Christ.
Quite. And and I think if there's an opportunity that from what it sounds like, they were paid for it as well. It's a lot of money to turn down. And I don't know if you've seen the UK economy at the moment, like people. It's a bit of a shame really that people are using it to lambast them, but I think fair play to them. I'd have done it. But I can understand that it probably wasn't a very nice experience. But yeah.
Yeah. Joey, you said before, again, your words not mine, get the idiots on.
Yeah.
Like in terms of like how people talk about football. Like the entire concept of this, sticking fans in a box, hiding them from the result, and then revealing it to them at full time. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the point of this? What are Sky trying to gain from this?
I couldn't do it. Because it's Sky, I feel like what they're gaining from it is clicks off of what is kind of a paid humiliation ritual. Because whoever comes out on the losing end of that is going to get. You're going to get engagement on your channels because people from the opposite side are going to have a go at them the entire time. So all they're getting is tons of clicks, tons of engagement across every platform. So I mean, they get what they want out of it, which is just engagement. As far as the people that go and stuff, I don't know. I mean, getting money for that's great, but I'm a nervous wreck as it is when it comes to Derby Day. So. If I had to sit in a room and just see screenshots or something, I'd be a mess. And I feel like I'd come out of it thinking it wasn't worth it. And then the online abuse after that, like I got other problems to deal with. I don't need that too.
Yeah. This is it though, Mulf. This is the part that I kind of get Joel's point on that. It's almost like to hell with the consequences. Yeah, like yes, you've paid these fans, and you've got your engagement out of it. But kind of like, does it matter how those fans feel afterwards? Does it matter how you know what happens to them afterwards? Because you know we've got our clicks, we've paid you for your services. Fantastic. Who cares?
I would say that the people they chose to do it in large were our content creators. Yeah, and I think often in that world, especially video content creators. Both negative reactions and positive are sort of equal. Like it's all part of just growing your numbers and all that. So I can see why that particular profile of fan would engage in something like that. I can especially understand why a City fan would do it because nobody thought we were going to lose that match. So you're looking at like get really, you know, that's a great day. I mean, you beat United, you have some banter with the United fans and, you know, most likely is going to happen is the United fans are going to end up on the end of abuse, you know, quote unquote abuse. They're going to get ridiculed online. I kind of feel from you guys that your vibe around that particular content, you didn't like it that much. And maybe that's skewed by the, I wonder if it's skewed by the fact that we did lose. I watched it last night. I think for once, that's pretty good content. That is a pretty cool idea. That's a pretty cool idea. And I don't know that I could do it myself, like Joey said. I don't know what I would have to gain from doing that. I can see, again, why those particular content creators would have a lot to gain, social media-wise and profile-wise. But I largely don't think that Sky's engagement of you know, fans is that great. But this particular one, I thought it was quite clever.
I think you've touched on something that I was thinking about as well, and I think you're quite right. I think it's a shame that the debate, or it came down to, why are those fans in a box and not in the ground, as opposed to look how different and fun this is, which maybe it should have been more about that than using it to beat fans with. And may I say that a lot of fans did come to their defence as well, of other clubs, and point out why it was a worthwhile thing to do. Not necessarily worthwhile from the agony and stress of being in a box, not being able to see the score, but, you know, from the other benefits of it.
And we do always say as well, don't we, that we want to see more City faces on TV and in media. Mm. And, you know, when you've got good people like Danny and Steve who are doing it, then, you know, at least there's good people there doing it. So there is that as well. That is it for this episode of the Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much to my guests receiving the hospital pass this week. So thank you very much, Matt Holland.
Thank you.
Joey McCune.
Thank you, brother.
I'm Mike Mulvaney.
Cheers, David.
Go and check out the Noisy Neighbours podcast. You said David Mooney on all socials. Noisy Pod on all socials. That's at least I've given you a good pass here.
Thank you.
There you go. Go and check it out. There is a clip coming up in a moment of this week's Nostalgia episode. As Matt said already, that was Amos Murphy and Joe Olivier from the City Ramble podcast, picking out their top 10 South American players. If you want to hear the full thing now, just head on over to members.bluemoonpodcast.com. I'll be back next week, or I might give it a miss if results don't pick up. Find out in 7 days.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
He's had the greatest moment in Premier League history. It won't ever be topped. I don't think it can't ever be topped. It's not even just necessarily that goal that was so important. I think one of my favourites was his goal against Napoli to break the record.
That went on to be named after his another eternal. Yeah,
even the story,
legend.
Even the story around him, like the fact that his son is dad's Aguero and his godfather's Maradona and all that, like that's just an unbelievable story. And I just think there isn't enough words in the dictionary to describe just how important he was to City and their success.
Yeah, never afraid to right a wrong as well, Amos, because had a running battle with David Luiz for some reason. don't know what had upset him. Fought a policeman at Bournemouth, so like he's perfectly happy to, when something's not right, he'll go in there and sort it out as well.
He wrote his own history at times, didn't he? And I think, as Joe said, you know, not many players sort of bow out with as an impressive match as they start out with. That Swansea debut, astonishing. That final game for Everton, probably even better than everything else in between, just absolutely stunning.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.